You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Tuesday, for all you people that had Monday off, welcome back to work. For everybody else, what is up? Hope you're having a good day. With any luck today, I'll be headed to Denver. We shall see. Some complications in the plan, though. The travel arrangements fell through. And then, as God would have it, my bank account got shut down over the weekend. Yeah, somebody in England. Somebody in England wants to take money out of my account. How about that? Awesome. Yeah, I mean, come on, man, really? Told me they probably got my credit card information out of a gas pump, because that was the last thing I did before that this stuff started. And they said they are notorious, so don't use your credit card, don't use your debit card at outdoor gas pumps. Always go inside. So, come on, that takes away the convenience of it, doesn't it? Anyway, so I guess I'll go inside from now on. Yeah, so anyway, I can't do anything. I can't make any travel arrangements. So today I got to head over to the bank, and when I'm done this morning, head over to the bank, and then... what do I have to do? I'll go to the bank and I'll see if I can get them to help me and do stuff. Yeah. If not, nobody going to Denver. So, hopefully keep my fingers crossed that, the bank can, work it out in short order. Watching the news as I've kind of tomorrow, kind of cool. Tomorrow, kind of cool. I have this incredible collection of Iwo Jima interviews, and you're going to hear live audio tomorrow. You'll hear, and then you'll hear from participants. I've been lucky enough in my life to interview three of them, and maybe more here in the future. We'll see about that. And so you'll hear those interviews. All in all, it's about 4 hours worth of audio stuff. So if you're at work, I would invite you just to put on your headset and spend the day at Iwo Jima. It'll start with live accounts of kind of that, if you've never heard it, play-by-play, going from the assault line in a landing craft. You'll hear the reporter narrate as they move through the water, as they go by battleships that are shooting. You can hear the sounds. You can hear him get scared, talk about his family, wondering if he'll ever see him again. So, it's amazing. And you'll hear interviews from the island. You'll hear something that Secretary Forrestal wrote to be released. You'll hear the first kind of combatant that got back to D.C., from a studio there. And so it's fascinating stuff, because it's how the nation learned about this incredible battle that was going on this island known as Iwo Jima, the first step into Japanese on the Japanese soil. So I was in the process of doing that, and taking a little while, not going to lie to you. And so, but in the course of, watching the news from yesterday, there's a couple of things, right, that to me it's like, what the hell, right? Plymouth Rock, right, where the Mayflower Pilgrims showed up 400 years ago, defaced with graffiti. I don't know. I'm getting too old. But I mean, like, what the hell, right? What the hell? I mean, what a shit show of a culture, What we value today, and how do we get there, and how do we stop it? I mean, how do you teach respect, or is this just always gone on, and this is just stupid people doing stupid stuff, and it shouldn't surprise any of us, right? It should not surprise any of us. The other thing that has struck me is, you have, a dude, last week, who drove his car or truck into a tent that was registering Republicans to vote, right? Or a tent for Trump supporters. Like, are you kidding me? And so, and you have all these people that are willing to be violent, at a peaceful event. I don't get it. I saw some video last night, my TV's on mute, but Laura Ingraham's show was on, and I don't particularly care for her, but it was on the background, and I saw this guy. It said, cleaning up San Francisco. So I turned the audio up, and here's this guy. He turns out he's a white guy, and he's in San Francisco, and they're organizing cleaning up the streets with volunteers, and he has this dude in his face telling him he's going to kill him. And you're just watching it, and you're like, what in the world is going on, man? And where are the cops when you need them? Where are the cops when you – I just don't get it. I don't get what's – I don't get this desire to bring – I don't get this desire to bring to be violent, when people are not doing anything provocative. Signing up people to vote, and you're so incensed because they don't share your views that you can't deal with it. So I don't know. To me, that stuff's very disturbing. And I've always said the thing I like most about doing my show is that I believe, you know, we can discuss in an articulate manner just about anything. And yet, when I see that stuff, man, I'll tell you what, I mean, it bothers me. You know, it bothers me. And do you not understand the First Amendment? Do you not understand what this nation was founded on, which is majority rule and minority rights? Do you not understand that? And that you think that you're in the minority so you can go ahead and tyrannize the minority? Or you're in the majority so you can tyrannize the minority? It's just, I don't know. It's just as stupid can be. Stupid people who now believe that for whatever reason, they have the right to impose their will on you. And so, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I want to, I saw something though. Grant Newsham's going to join us. We'll check news headlines. But I saw something, a story yesterday that I want to, I'm going to get the author of the articles on to talk about it. But the headline that caught my eye was two main methods VA and DOD use to treat PTSD don't really work. The Department of Defense and Veterans Affairs use two major therapy approaches to treat PTSD. And it turns out, they don't work all that well. A study conducted by researchers at New York University's Grossman School of Medicine and recently published in the Journal of American Medicine, Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA as it's known, insights summarized the findings of a recent study conducted clinical trials into the DOD and VA's first-line treatments for post-traumatic stress. Prolonged exposure therapy, which is known as PE, and cognitive processing therapy, CPT, the results were not promising. In the trials conducted, only 31% of patients recovered or improved. Post-traumatic stress symptoms were partially alleviated following treatment. They often persisted at high enough levels to still diagnose the individual with post-traumatic stress disorder. Quote, overall, these new findings suggest that first-line psychotherapies do not effectively manage military-related PTSD in large portions of patients and do not outperform non-trauma-focused interventions, the study read. By non-trauma-focused intervention, the study means approaches such as group therapy, present-centered talk therapy, family therapy, hypnosis, relaxation, and meditation, as opposed to PE and CPT, which we talked about before, which require those suffering from post-traumatic stress symptoms to focus on the traumatic event and discuss it at length. Quote, for military service-related PTSD, more emotionally demanding therapies like PE and CPT, which repeatedly activate and process memories of traumatic experiences, were not more beneficial than interventions which do not require patients to focus on their traumatic events, including present-centered therapy, a supportive problem-solving treatment, transcendental meditation, and biological treatment such as antidepressants, a release from New York University's Langone Health Read. In conclusion, the DOD and the VA's use of PE and CPT, again, their frontline treatments, is a one-size-fits-all approach that is simply not effective, according to the study. Quote, in the meantime, current clinical trials strongly suggest that treating military-related PTSD involves significant clinical complexity and heterogeneity. For many who have served in the military, a course of standardized trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy for PTSD is emotionally demanding and likely to result in only modest clinical improvements, senior author of the study, Charles Mamar, said. An estimated 10 to 20% of post-9/11 veterans who experience combat experience symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. For Gulf War era veterans, 12% experience symptoms, and 30% of Vietnam veterans have experienced the disorder at some point. So I read that and I thought a couple of disturbing things. One, why doesn't the VA know that? And why didn't the VA find this out before anybody else finds it out? Are those legitimate questions? So here, so this is my problem. So the problem that you have with mental health around the country, and I'm going to read you another little interesting little tidbit here. Why the U.S. military can't recruit more mental health professionals. So I talked to you. So somebody stands up a mental health program. Does that mean it's good? No, it doesn't. Okay. Can it be good? Could be. Can it be bad? Can be. So now people show up, whether they be on active duty or discharged through the VA. They show up. The statistics say that the number can be as high as 66% are not impacted by the two major modes of therapy that is recommended by the VA. Right? And we wonder why people are killing themselves. And we wonder why people are killing themselves. The good news is that it might only be 50%. So 50% of the people that go in are not helped. Maybe as high as 66%. Amazing. Amazing. And that's if, like, everything's okay and the actual, you know, and the veteran or the active duty service member actually goes through the therapy. And a lot of people don't get that far. Because it's not good. They don't like it. They don't like the therapist. They don't like what's going on. They don't like the whole way it's working. Now, here's a second study. I need to track this Patricia Keim down. I think her name's Keim or Kimmy. I'm not sure. Headline in Military Times. VA DOD recommended PTSD therapies don't help many military patients, a review finds. So it's a review of the same study. And this is lead author, Maria Steenkamp. All right. Overall, these new findings suggest that first-line psychotherapies do not effectively treat military-related PTSD in large portions of patients and do not outperform non-trauma-focused intervention. She's a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at Grossman. The report did find that all active treatment considered, including PE, CPT, present-centered therapy, meditation, and medications reduce PTSD symptoms, often with moderate to large effect. So that's all treatments. So that's, I guess, the good news. Still, just 31 to 50% of patients actually achieve what Steenkamp would call a clinical success. She goes on, quote, "We found that a third to half the patient respond well, a third to half to CBT and PE. Of course, that's the same way as saying two-thirds to half don't respond in a way that we would consider successful," she went on to say. And then, really, I think the most significant part is the conclusion, right? And this is, again, what's her first name? Maria Steenkamp? Yep. So this is Maria again. Her review findings have raised questions about DOD and VA policies that prioritize CPT and PE, she said, and she hopes they spark a broader conversation on new approaches to treating PTSD. Quote, "Step one is to realize there needs to be some kind of change to the way the system is right now. Right now, we are really hanging our hats on PE and CPT too much, and the data are really showing we can't continue going down that path because we are leaving behind two-thirds to half of the patients. There are multiple roads to recovery. STEAM Camp encourages physicians treating military personnel and veterans and the patients themselves to try different treatments until they find one that works. And so, I mean, that has to be the message. But that's not really, that's why people stop going. My fear is that the military folks reading your paper are going to read this and think, quote, this means there's no point in going to PTSD therapy. I'll just suffer. But the message is for people to keep trying different therapies. Keep giving each one a real shot. Be patient. It can be a lengthy recovery process. Recovery. See, even the words, I'm not going to recover. You're going to coexist. I got to give Patricia a call and get her on the program and get her thoughts on this. Now, the third part that I saw, which I thought was pretty interesting, is this. She and Patricia Kimmy writes this, or Kim, I don't know. Why the U.S. military can't recruit more mental health professionals. Now, when I say this stuff, people lose their minds. And I'm very careful, but I try not to shy away from that which is truthful. That if we can't talk about the things that are true, right, then I don't really know what's going on. All right. And I won't do that. And so when I say, you know, people stand up a mental health program, does that mean it's good? Is that a slam on individuals? Well, I guess if we run your shit up there and we put your name on it, then I guess it would be a slam. But I don't do that. I'm just trying to point out the obvious to them so they don't quit going, okay? Because you have to be your own patient activist, advocate. And so it helps to understand the lay of the land. So just because somebody has a mental health program doesn't mean it's a good one, okay? Doesn't mean it's a good one. So let me just read to you some of the things out of this article. The military health system is experiencing a mental health staffing shortage similar to those seen across the country. A new report to Congress explains some of the challenges in requiring and retaining these providers. Low pay, few advancement opportunities, and an excessive workload rank as the top reasons the military services fail to recruit and retain psychiatrists, psychologists, and other mental health providers, according to a new Defense Department report. With more than 50% of psychiatrists nationwide able to run cash-only practices, with many making six-figure salaries, the Army, Navy, and Air Force lack a comprehensive advantage when it comes to paying civilian and drawing military providers. Think about that. 50%. Yeah, you might want to change professions, right? We might want to go become a psychiatrist. 50%, right, can run cash-only businesses. You know who runs cash-only businesses? Plastic surgeons do that. Yeah, business is good for them. Cash-only businesses. And why? So now the question is, okay, so who comes to the work for the DOD and the VA? Either somebody who has a vocation, maybe a veteran who wants to help veterans, maybe the spouse of a veteran, okay? Maybe a novice that's looking to get a start, so you'll start with the VA, okay? Maybe somebody that can't get a job, make it more money, couldn't cut it in private practice. Now, that's the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? But again, it's just the truth. Talks about how people get promoted. The report noted that the D.C. area, as in Washington, D.C., is one of the most challenging in the country to hire mental health providers. More than 80% of psychiatrists, psychologists, and licensed clinical social workers do not take insurance operating on a cash basis only. How about that? Absolutely amazing. So it goes into kind of the number game of in how each branch of the service is faring. And let me tell you, it's not a good story. So interesting. So when you look at the landscape of mental health services provided, it's not pretty. It's not pretty. And so what I find frustrating is, you know, when young people do exactly what we tell them to do, and they go, and then what they find isn't very good, right? They find one approach. This is how we're going to solve your problem. And it doesn't work for 50 to 66% of the people that show up. So they keep going. Well, I mean, if you have an exceptional therapist, maybe you would. But what does that report just tell us? Right? That the exceptional therapist is not going to come work in the military. They're going to run their cash-only business, and they're going to live the good life. Yay? Yeah. So those are the challenges of mental health. That's why, to me, the solution is us. The solution is the truth. The solution is us. And the solution is us being there for each other. And I will tell you this. I yesterday after I did the show, I was messing around outside. Something happened with my contacts. I don't know. They won't sync right. So I had a bunch of contacts in my phone that I had to put back into my phone. So I was doing that. And I ran across somebody. And I met him. I'm not going to tell you where I met him. But somebody who'd been abused sexually by a member of their family, a Marine. He sees post-traumatic winning. And he leaves when it's over. And he waits till everybody's gone. And he comes back in the other door. And he walks up to me and he says, "Could I talk to you?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely. What's up?" And he said, "I've never told this to anybody before, but I was sexually abused by somebody in my family. And you're the first person I've ever told about it." Now, I mean, you can only imagine. I mean, so I texted him today. I said, "Hey, man, what's up?" And he said, "Hey, Mac, how are you? Good to hear from you." I said, "Well, why haven't you texted me, loser?" And he said, no good reason. So I asked him, "Why did you come back to talk to me that day in 29 Palms? He responded, "What you said really hit home." And then I said, "It's the truth. You knew that." He said, "I did." And then I just wrote, "Just keep helping others and that pain will shrink." And then he said, "You're right." And then I said, "Mine's still there, but I hardly feel it on most days." And he said, "That's good." And I said, "You'll get to that same place." And he said, "Someday." And then he wrote this. Imagine this. "I talked to my family about it a little bit. And I said, 'Holy shit,' exclamation mark, we're texting. I said, 'That's awesome. What did they say?' And he said, 'They supported me and wanted me to talk to them about it more.'" And I just wrote, "That's great, man. Were you scared?" And he said, "A little bit." I said, "I would have been scared shitless." I said, "That's baller stuff, man." He said, "Some cried." And then he wrote, "I never thought I could have done that." And I said, "Congratulations, man. I can't tell you how proud I am of you and all the shit you've accomplished." I said, "That stuff is scary as fuck. You did good." And he wrote back, I couldn't have done it without you. I said, well, you've now got to be me for somebody else. And you've taken the biggest steps you'll ever have to take in all of this, which are the first steps. So, I mean, I believe in my heart of hearts that when we tell people the truth, when we share our own story, whatever that is, and you're not afraid to go there, I mean, you can help people. And, I mean, you can only imagine, I think anybody listening can imagine what it's like to read that. Now, again, this is somebody who was sexually abused by a member of their family for years who got told that if you ever say anything about it, I'll only make it worse. And live with that until they saw post-traumatic winning. And then very discreetly came back and had a conversation. And that conversation has led to other good things. And that person is going to get their life transformed. And so, I mean, had he gone to someplace else, are we going to, you know, make him relive it and we're going to turn the lights off and on and all that kind of crazy shit? You know, I don't know. Does that work? It might. But I'll tell you what does work. What does is the truth, and that is you're not going to get over it. It's going to bother you the rest of your life, and that's okay. And then it goes from there. And then telling them how to give their own suffering meaning, and that is by change using that with this truth to change the lives of other people. And so I'm going to get Patricia Kimmy or Patricia Keim on, and we're going to talk about that. Because, man, I so believe there's a better way. Now, let me tell you, if that therapy works for you, good for you. Good on you. God bless you. But I think there's better ways. I think there's better ways. And I don't even like some of the ways it's discussed in terms of cure and things like that. Yeah, I don't know who gets cured, man. Nobody I know certainly does. Nobody I know certainly does. So anyway, all right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will officially begin the program. So more of All Marine Radio coming up next on a Tuesday on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good, but are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue on a Tuesday. For a lot of you, Monday. Congratulations on that deal, all you federal employees. I saw an article about sleep I want to talk about. And then we'll check out some DOD news, as we do, on our way to chatting with Grant Newsham at the top of the hour. One of the stories that's in the news this morning is Nancy Pelosi, who's not normally prone to speak on defense issue, but she did, lo and behold. And here's the headline. Pelosi warns NATO allies against using Huawei. Yeah. Like, what? Yeah. What? Yeah. From Brussels. No NATO allies should succumb to the temptation of letting Chinese tech giant Huawei into their next generation cellular networks, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Monday at Allied headquarters, turning U.S. opposition to Huawei into a bipartisan effort. Pelosi, in case you don't know, who's a Democrat from the state of California, said the invasion of privacy that would result from having Huawei integrated into Europe's 5G communication network would be like having the state police, the Chinese state police, right in your pocket. She insisted such technology was far too sensitive to turn over to Chinese interest, even though they can deliver such technology more cheaply thanks to the fact that the company relied on Western know-how to build its system. Quote, while some people may say it's cheaper to do Huawei, well, yeah, it's a People's Liberation Army initiative using reverse engineering from Western technology, Pelosi told reporters in Belgium. So, of course, it's going to be cheaper to put on the market. And if it's cheaper, then they can get the market share and they, China, can bring in their lack of privacy. So kind of interesting, right? The United States Secretary of Defense Mark Esper has been in Europe the past week talking essentially the same theme to European allies. Don't do it, right? Don't do it. All right? And Britain notably announced last month that it would allow Huawei to participate in certain non-sensitive areas of its network. And subsequent to that, evidently President Trump had a, I guess, very frank phone call with Boris Johnson, which did not go well. And ultimately, Boris Johnson, I believe, canceled a visit that was upcoming to the United States. So, yeah, interesting stuff going on. And I'll tell you what, you don't see the Speaker of the House acting bipartisan too many forums these days. So talk about something that breaks squelch. And the story ends like this. Pelosi warned allies not to cave in to Chinese pressure to take Huawei. You cannot sell the privacy of the people of your country down the river, Pelosi said. So pretty interesting that the Speaker of the House in Brussels addressing NATO and warning them, do not go there lest you risk your security relationship with the United States. And specifically the intel sharing that happens in the United States. Headlines out of Afghanistan, above the fold, President Ghani announced as the winner after nearly 5 months. Ashraf Ghani has been declared the winner of Afghan's disputed presidential election on Tuesday, nearly 5 months after the ballots were cast. The incumbent Ghani received 50.64% of the vote, the country's election commission announced. The second place was Chief Executive Officer Abdullah Abdullah, who received 39.52% of the vote, followed by Warlord Gulbuddin Hekmatyar with 3.85% of the vote, the official results from September 28th election said. Abdullah and Hekmatyar previously said they would not accept the results of the election. Feridun Quazun, a spokesman for Abdullah, said Tuesday that the candidate and his team have, quote, walked out of the election process due to what he described as illegal behavior by the election commission. Quote, the election has lost its legitimacy, Quazun said. So anyway, the for what it's worth, the Afghan president is reelected. The other big news out of Afghanistan, obviously, is the announcement by both the United States and the Taliban that a peace deal will be signed at the end of the month, and that it will essentially begin the week of de-escalated violence will begin on February 22nd. The Taliban said Monday that a peace deal with the United States will be signed by the end of the month. And the top U.S. negotiator described himself as cautiously optimistic about the process. I would use Grant Newsham's phrase, cautiously pessimistic about the process, to describe, I think, the better way to feel about all of this. And again, the admonition that the Taliban, the quote-unquote Taliban, is not a single corporate entity. It is a conglomeration of people and groups, and most of the time they are not on the same sheet of music. So most of the time they do not act in concert, which is always a challenge to get anything done with them in the collective. So you got that going for you. Relative to, I woke up this morning. Actually, I didn't wake up as early as I normally do. And I saw this headline as I was perusing the news, right? Shut-eye and sleep hygiene, the truth about why you keep waking up at 3 a.m. I was like, how do they know I woke up at 3 a.m.? Damn it, they watch my phone all the time. And it talks, you know, one of the things it says is waking up at night is normal. What? Yeah. After dropping off, we move through different stages of sleep, a cycle that takes the average adult about 90 minutes to complete and speeds up towards morning. Quote, the night is also punctuated by brief awakenings, said Alice Gregory, a psychology professor at Goldsmiths, University of London, and author of the book Nodding Off. She says it's quite normal to wake up during the night. No, well, I don't feel so bad now. Typically, people return to sleep without realizing they've ever been awake, but sometimes we might at least be more aware of it or pulled entirely awake. Reasons range from fairly obvious, being too hot or too cold, needing the loo, obviously she's a Brit, having a nightmare or a crying baby, to the medical, right, disorder breathing such as sleep apnea or any other night malady. Waking up during the night does not necessarily mean you have insomnia, which, says Gregory, is diagnosed alongside other criteria such as frequency of this occurrence and how long it has been happening. If you find yourself waking regularly during the night, certainly flag this with your general practitioner so they can consider any possible underlying cause. Still, sleep deprivation takes its own toll from irritability and reduced focus in the short term to an increased risk of obesity, heart disease, and diabetes. If you do find yourself regularly waking up without any apparent reason, what can you do about it? Okay, now here's a good doctor again. Quote, it's a misconception that we sleep through the night. Nobody ever does, said sleep coach Katie Fisher. Waking up as much as 5 or 7 times a night is not necessarily a cause for concern. The most important thing is how you feel when you get up. In the morning, do you feel refreshed or groggy and unable to function 30 minutes after waking up? If there is nothing to suggest an underlying medical issue, Fisher will look at the bigger picture with the patient. It's really important to know if they have children. Do they have a partner who snores or who works shifts, she says. They might not have their own sleep issues, but they might be sleeping next to somebody who does. Wow. Wow. So the article goes on, and it does talk about diet, pro-sleep bedtime snacks, staying away if you do wake up from caffeine, right? Keeping your cell phone away from you. This is kind of interesting. Our bedrooms, even our beds, have become centers for the cinema, your office, a dining room for some, says sleep consultant Marianne Taylor. You would be amazed at how significant that is for sleep. You're training to associate your bed with wakefulness. For that reason, if you do struggle to fall back to sleep or wake up during the night, the advice is to get up for a bit. Don't just lie there. It's counterproductive. I don't know about that. So too is looking at the clock, especially if it doubles as your phone. As soon as your brain has registered that it's 2 a.m., you convince yourself that that's your lot, says Taylor, which is to begin to worry. Such worry loops might be waking you up in the first place. Interesting. Interesting. A mindset change may be what's needed. People might have this belief they're bad sleepers and there is nothing they can do about it. Sometimes it's just changing people's perceptions of what good sleep looks like. Taylor says she really cannot bear fitness trackers which monitor sleep for focusing people's minds on often inaccurate data. It is wrong to assume that you must sleep through the night every night, she says. We all have blips in our sleep. It's never going to be that you sleep brilliantly all the time. But accepting that, even as you lie awake, hours before dawn might be the first step towards it. Yeah, I would tell you that most of my friends, we don't fight it. It's a fact of our lives. But I just thought it was an interesting article because I do wake up at 3. Actually, sometime between 1:30 and 3. And I read that and I went, whoa. And honestly, I don't lose any sleep over the fact that I don't sleep, but I do find it interesting. And so I obviously interesting enough to take a look at the in terms of this article. I just wind up taking a nap late in the afternoon. Yeah, I mean, so, and when I say nap, I don't mean like, you know, people tell you, oh, I take it like a 15-minute power nap. Yeah, that's not what I do. I'll sleep for 90 minutes and then get up and, you know, I'm good. So, it's happened to me long enough, and I don't, you know, I've been prescribed medications for it, which I don't take, and I never have. And so I'll wake up, and if I can't go back to sleep pretty quick, I will, I'll read. And at some point, most nights, if I do wind up reading, I fall asleep at some point. And then, after that, I normally can always get back to sleep, and rarely do I get up and work, although sometimes I've done that. And then I'll take a big nap later on in the day if I don't feel like I got enough sleep. If I'm tired, my body says, we're tired, we want to go to sleep. I say, all right, let's do that. So, anyhow. Top five stories in Early Bird. And then we'll take a break. Grant Newsham will join us. And we'll get Grant's take on the whole Huawei thing. To me, it's, you know, you've seen all kinds of... articles that have discussed why it is ridiculous for Huawei to be involved in any free nation's infrastructure. Certainly, you can understand why African nations are doing it. They'll do it for on the cheap, blah, 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 blah. So you can understand that if you're an emerging nation, somebody else is gonna go ahead and do your infrastructure. I mean, that's a big deal for you as a developing nation. So you can understand that, but not Europe, right? There's no countries in Europe that can do that for each other. The EU with all their technological sophistication. They don't have vendors that can do that. Why would they farm that out to the Chinese? So we'll ask Grant about that. He tends to at least have an opinion about about most things. Top five stories in Early Bird. Number one, Esper to Allies, picking Huawei risks Intel and security ties with the United States. Whoa. We shall see. We shall see. The NATO alliance is strained. Obviously, it's strong in some parts of Europe. It's weak in others. So will the NATO alliance continue to thrive? Right. Interesting. As the United Kingdom, you know, is a diminished economic nation. As France is diminished, wasn't what it used to be in world events. And as you know, it's is the NATO a relic of post World War II life, and we need to move on to something better with allies that will participate. It'll be interesting to see if all that survives. And then you have Germany, the economic power on the European Western European continent. They don't want to play. They don't want to play. So maybe is it time to just admit that hey, it doesn't work anymore. And NATO will go away, and we'll form a NATO, you know, -2 with the countries that do want to participate, and we'll sign up to be members of that. And if you don't, then you don't. You're on your own. So anyway, Esper to Allies, picking Huawei risk Intel and security ties with the U.S. That's not a small deal. Number two from the New York Times, an Afghan killed two Americans. The U.S. government issued the gun. The Department of Defense has dispatched hundreds of thousands of small arms to Afghan security forces. It was one of these weapons that left two U.S. troops dead in a recent insider attack. I'm not sure if that's much of a story. Right? We're attempting to stand up their military, their police and security forces. Right? And a lot of times around the world, we will go ahead and supply those weapons. We've done it in Iraq. We've done it in other nations. So slow news day. We already talked about this. U.S. Taliban ceasefire to begin February 22nd. A seven-day reduction in violence negotiated between the United States and the Taliban is set to begin on February 22nd. So we shall see. There's more than enough actors there in Afghanistan whose interest it is to encourage instability. And so you may see them act up during that seven-day period. So we'll see. We shall see. Cautiously pessimistic, I think, is a Grant's term. Number four, Pentagon ID soldier who died while supporting operations in the Horn of Africa. It was a non-combat-related death in Djibouti. Number five, Iran-backed group launches attack near a small garrison in Syria housing American special operators. Kind of an interesting little story. A U.S.-backed Syrian partner force said Sunday that an Iran-backed group launched an attack inside an area upon agreed-upon deconfliction zone. Maghar al-Toura, an anti-ISIS U.S.-backed group, operates out of a small garrison near the Iraq border. It tweeted Sunday that an Iran proxy launched an attack against its forces and breached the 55-kilometer deconfliction zone that surrounds a small garrison housing American commandos known as Al-Tanf, T-A-N-F. Right. Al-Tanf isn't on the edge of the world, but you can see the edge of the world from Al-Tanf. You can look it up, Al-T-A-N-F, Iraq. Yeah. The anti-ISIS fighters said that they repelled the attack and that the Syrian regime had lost control of its allies, which the MAT described as a rogue Iranian proxy. So anyway, you've also seen reports of, you know, rockets being being fired in Iraq, mortars being fired in Iraq. That is the local people doing their thing. They've been doing that for going on a couple decades now. And it's not accurate. It tends to land in the dirt and doesn't hit anybody. So, story in the Wall Street Journal, and then we'll take a break, is Senegal seeks continued U.S. military presence as Trump administration weighs cuts. So you've seen the Trump administration floating less involvement in the African on the African continent, and you've seen Europe react to it. But it's all, you know, it's crazy stuff, right? Yeah, no. Americans, don't leave. We need your presence in Africa to help guarantee Africa is a safe place. But, you know, we're going to do business with Huawei, and yeah, we don't really want to kick in any of the forces, and we really don't want to cooperate with you relative to hitting the 2% target for defense spending relative to gross domestic product. We don't want to do that either. So just so you know, there you have it. Thank you. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Grant Newsham will join us here on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio. Expeditionary today. Hopefully. There's been a few hiccups, so I'm not actually sure if this is all going to take place. But we shall see. So hopefully headed for Denver to speak tomorrow. One more mention of it, but a special Iwo Jima event, the first of two. What you'll hear about this week is just live firsthand reports and then interviews with people that were there. So it's about 4 hours total. And it's cool. It starts with the ship to shore movement and live broadcast from that. Interviews from the island. James Forrestal, the Secretary of the Navy, was off the coast. Something that he wrote. interviews with naval officers as they came back, one of the first ones to get to Washington, D.C. So it's you'll hear it as the nation heard it first, and then you'll hear four interviews. Cal Humphrey, probably one of the favorite interviews I've ever done. You'll hear Tony Capa, who I just met last weekend at a dinner for Iwo Jima veterans at Camp Pendleton. You'll meet Woody Williams, United States Marine Medal of Honor recipient from the Battle of Iwo Jima. An interview I did with him at the Marine Corps Marathon a couple years ago, probably about a year and a half ago, if that. And then there's a piece of audio that is awesome with a Marine by the name of Don Mates, M-A-T-E-S. He's just a wonderful human being who devoted much of his life, like Jack Riley has, to serving other veterans. And so his story starts in World War II, I believe on Guam and Iwo Jima, and you'll hear from him as well. So you'll hear all of that tomorrow. And then a week later, we'll kind of turn the dial and we'll focus on the re-identification of the flag raisers. I have just awesome interviews with starting with Stephen Foley, and then moving to Marine Corps historians, Mary Reinwald sits on the Hewley board, and you'll hear a couple different interviews with her as new information comes to light and the Marine Corps attempts to reconcile finally with the forensic evidence who was actually in those flag raisings. And then we learned the identities of guys who we don't know. And it's really amazing stuff. So we'll do that in a week. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.